Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Oh, welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I'm your host for the first hour. A lot to cover this week with the Fed statement and some of the market moves. I'm going to kick off this show with Mark Chandler. He is the managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I visit every day. Mark, let's start off with the Fed statement that was, again, even a more dovish hold, I think you can say. We had Powell mention in the press conference many times that they still have an optimistic outlook for the U.S. economy, but their actions are telling a very different story. However, you could just say that their actions are more reflecting the weakness that they are seeing globally. What's your recap of what we heard out of the Fed this week?
Yeah, I do agree. The Fed was more dovish than people expected. A couple of channels that they communicate that dovishness on. One is that they're going to begin tapering their balance sheet unwind starting in May. So it's going to slow down its unwind, and it's going to finish at the sort of the early end of what people thought, and that's going to be September. They did that, and the other signal really would come from their forecasts, and their growth forecasts were shaved by about 0.25% this year. Inflation was shaved by about 0.1%. But the bigger thing that people focused on was the fact that the median dot plot, the median forecast, which the market takes despite being told not to, the market, including analysts like myself, take it as somehow representative of a Fed's view, even though it's just the median, the mathematical averaging, if you will, of the different forecasts. And they have now the median dot, if you will, the median forecast has gone from two hikes. There was a forecast in December to nothing this year. So that's roughly what this is 11 members or so expect not to change rates this year, while six, about a third, are expecting to raise rates once or twice. We're looking at the median dot there. And so that's how the Fed conveyed the dovishness. So why the market thought was dovish. And they began rallying U.S. treasuries, which in effect were pushing down yields and pushing down global yields.
Let's talk about yields and the yield curve, because on Friday we started to get these reports that there was an inversion of the yield curve. However, that's the 3-month, 10-year inversion. First time this happened, though, since 2007. The 2-year, 10-year spread is now in single digits, so that hasn't fully inverted. It's really the long end just continuing to get hit. But that's, I think, because everyone sees that the Fed is going to support and potentially even be printing money. Who knows? Probably next year. Well, who knows when that actually happens. But either way, a big rush into treasuries. How concerned are you about this inversion of the yield curve, or close to that 210 spread being inverted?
Yeah, I know. I'm following it. I'm not so disturbed by it. I guess I recognize that the track record for it, and the lag time between the time it happens and the time you get a recession. But I'm also thinking that, I know it isn't going to sound, it might be like words, you know, like blackmail with me with one day, but I think this time could be different in the sense that why are U.S. rates so low? Well, partly one of the factors dragging down U.S. rates is the fact that you've got increasing amount of negative yielding bonds in Europe and in Japan. And just today, for example, as we headed into the weekend, Europe had reported this very weak purchasing managers, flash purchasing managers index data for March. People like me who were looking for some kind of traction in the Eurozone were very disappointed. And so for the first time since 2016, the German 10-year yield now is negative, below zero. And imagine like Spain, for example, has an election coming up next month. And what's happening now is that despite the election coming up and the uncertainty, the Spanish government can borrow money for 2 years at minus 36 basis points. The Japanese 10-year yield went to almost minus 9 basis points today, the most also since 2016. So I think that this sort of this global lower yields, such negative yields overseas, I think pushes down, drags down U.S. yields, regardless of what's going on with the U.S. economy. And also, I think there's an important lesson in here about the role of central banks. The ECB is not buying bonds. The U.S. Treasury has, of course, we stopped QE. The balance is unwinding. Conditions should be tighter if this is going to be like, if this is what the central banks are causing to happen. But instead, even the U.S. yield, our 10-year yield is testing 240 today. Last week, we closed dipping below 260.
So, Mark, how sustainable are these low yields then? You are absolutely right that a lot of other major economies are stuck in negative territory, but that's not very encouraging if we are seeing weak economic data and already zero to negative yielding instruments.
Yes, no, that's right. That's right. This is a tense time. I think that there's not a playbook written here, especially if the economies can't get better traction. I still am a little bit optimistic that the U.S. economy begin reporting some very mixed economic data. The decline in yields we've seen is going to help stimulate the interest rate sensitive sectors of the economy, of course, with a lag. But today we saw, well, this week what we saw really, I mean, I think after we had some disappointing jobs data, and then the second Friday of March, we had some disappointing industrial production data. Today's data was slightly disappointing in the form of the Purchasing Managers Index, the market PMIs, but existing home sales had jumped like 3 or 4 times more than economists expected. And that's what you'd want to see, is the interest rate-sensitive sectors of the economy beginning to get some traction. Earlier this week, we had a stronger-than-expected Philly Fed survey as well. And that's also what we'd want to expect, I guess, is that if the economy is coming out of a soft patch, you expect to see some mixed economic data. And we are seeing some mixed economic data. Some data is better than expected. And that'll affect, the data surprise models. But Europe's PMIs are very disappointing, and I think we have to go back to the drawing board and see, can they avoid really a contraction?
Now, let's also talk about currencies, because one thing that I think is quite curious is the fact that the U.S. dollar did get hit that just for a couple hours after the Fed statement, but Thursday and Friday, it came back quite strong. The U.S. dollar remains elevated even when the Fed is getting more and more dovish. Does this also just tell you about what's going on around the world more so than anything else?
Yes, I'm sort of thinking that despite this, you know, we've had this tremendous rally in U.S. Treasury. We're talking about the interest rate differential between the U.S. and Germany, the U.S. and Australia, U.S. and Japan, still is fairly wide. And it hasn't really gone down that much because other countries, well, Japan, the 10-year has, because Japan's yields are not nearly as volatile as ours. And they're already, like, as I said, below zero. So I don't know. I'm thinking that the dollar strength right now is coming from, yes, it's sort of relative aspect of it. The U.S. is struggling, and I think a lot of people aren't convinced about my lingering hopes as a diehard Cubs fan that the economy can get some traction here. But so I think it's not driven by the economy per se, but because the U.S. is doing, people perceive, slightly better than elsewhere, the least ugly, if you will.
Exactly. And that's some of the data that we have seen, where even though it's slow growth, it is still better than what a lot of these other countries are dealing with. What do you think about just the overall liquidity within the market? It seems like all these central banks are now really stuck. They clearly don't want to be printing money again, but they are seeing signs where they might get forced into more money printing, which just seems redundant now because that seems to be their only play to save these markets. Where do we stand within this whole liquidity within the overall financial markets?
Yeah, you know, with the bond yields falling, you'd expect to see, that liquidity would improve. But I think that the volatility is so low in all the major markets. So we're getting a big jump in volatility today with the U.S. stocks getting hit. But in general, I'd say that I think here's the problem, is that the narrative that most of us have is that it's sort of like what the Federal Reserve tells us, like someone like Janet Yellen says, she thinks that the Federal Reserve is a murderer. She thinks the Federal Reserve kills expansions. But yet I look at the record, the last three expansions we've had, the last three downturns we've had, were not caused by the Federal Reserve over-tightening. The great financial crisis, most people would argue, the Fed was too easy, not too tight. And the tech bubble, that was also not really a function of Federal Reserve monetary policy. Same thing with the savings and loan crisis before that. And so I think that, like for me, in a lot of ways, like the Brexit story, we're sort of being victims of, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. We are our own worst enemies. The stories, the narratives we tell ourselves, sort of identify which tools we can get out of, what we can do. And this narrative that the Federal Reserve kills business expansions, it might have been true. Paul Volcker, who's a hero of a lot of people who like, who like the Volcker rule, who want to keep that, who believe that Volcker is like a straightforward, honest, and credible person, which of course he is. But Volcker might have been the last Federal Reserve chairman who killed the business cycle to squeeze out inflation.
Yeah, interesting comments. Now, what about inflation? Do you see an environment where we actually do start to see an uptick in inflation?
That's the problem. You know, we're going to get this little shocker next week, I think, is so what the U.S. is going to report is we're going to get a revision of the Q4 GDP numbers, probably be revised down. People look at the GDP deflator with that. But also, next week, we'll get the January PCE. And so we're going to see the headline rate fall from maybe 1.7 to 1.4%. And that's going to be primarily because of food and energy. And when you look at the core rate, it'll come probably stay the same, which is about 1.9%. Now, here's the thing, is I was just having this discussion on Twitter, is that what does the Fed target? Many economists, many people in the media think that the Fed targets core inflation. The Fed talks a lot about core inflation. But what I posted on my Twitter account is a letter that I had, a letter of exchange I had with the Federal Reserve Press Office. And I specifically asked them, because of this confusion, last November, I asked them, and they wrote me the letter back. I got it dated. I put it on my Twitter on January 1st. And it was very clear that they believe, they basically quote out of a Fed statement, that they target, that they think that 2% on the core PCE deflator is the closest like metric for the price stability mandate. So the important thing is not so much that the core rate stays at 1.9%. That's important, but the more important thing is where the headline rate is, which is what they target. And it's going to come in well below that 2%.
Very interesting comments, but hey, we're going to be watching closely. There's still a lot of data to process, but right now, seeing how the markets have reacted to the Fed pause and a more dovish pause, as well as, for the most part, taking off any rate hikes for this year, it's a worrisome sign for, I think, global economies that these central banks are getting this worried and that they are still so much stuck in low to negative interest rates, never really able to get themselves out of that little hole that they dug themselves that might only get deeper now. Mark, it's great having you on the show. Thank you for taking some time this weekend and recapping some of the major news that we had this week and some of the market reactions. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.